Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 11th, 2012, episode 442. Good morning, horse people.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the live Horses in the Morning this morning. Posted on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. The picture of the adorable, lovely opening ceremony parade uniforms for the U.S. Olympic team designed by Ralph Lauren. So what do you think?
I did see those. Now, well, you dropped out there for a second, Glenn. So basically what you're saying is you posted the pictures and you want my opinion?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Well, I saw them and I thought, I didn't know who designed them. And they don't seem very American to me. I mean, they seem so... I don't know, they almost seem a little French. So the uniforms are white pants, a blue blazer, and almost like a beret on top of the head. And I'm sorry,
I'm not
American.
Sure it is a beret. I'm not even sure it is a beret. It's some kind of funky hat.
I don't know. Yeah, it looks like a beret to me. So the funky hat beret thing, I don't see that Americans really wear berets. And then I realized that the actual designer was Ralph Lauren, so which makes total sense because the crisp, clean lines of the pants and the jacket and the straight cut, you know, this blah, 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 that the outfit screams Ralph Lauren. I mean, my God, it just screams it.
Do you know what the outfit screams? It screams Ivy League prep school debate competition, not Olympics.
You know, it screams better Glee Club. Glee Club.
Yeah, so. Glee Club. It could be Glee Club. But can you imagine some of these great big weightlifter wrestler dudes coming in their white pants and their huge jackets?
You know, ever since my days of being in the barn trying to keep my pants clean and going into dressage, which is like the most impossible thing to keep white britches clean, I don't see how this is going to work for many of the people that are on the Olympic team, and I'm just not a fan of white pants. So while I don't think I have as much venom for it as you do, because they need to look nice, they need to look, you know, presentable,
they need to look
American.
Athletic. And athletic.
Yeah.
Let me read you some of the comments that were posted on some of the pages here. Someone needs to be fired. Oh, here's someone who agrees with you. They look French and in no way should be considered a good thing. yuck. Two thumbs up if they're made in America. So here's someone that liked them. I really liked them. Sporty and clean. Very appropriate for the parade. Saw them on the Today Show. If it's for the U.S. team, why is Ralph Lauren's huge logo on the jacket pocket? I thought about that, too, because his logo is bigger than the USA patch on the other side.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it pretty much is. I thought about that. Here's one that said, I can say that I'm happy they don't have cowboy hats again, but these are not much better. I kind of like the cowboy hats. A lot of preppy comments, like if they belonged at whatever big preppy school that is in London, that would be perfect. It just goes on and on. I would say 90% of these, though, say they do not like them. At least 90%.
I would venture a guess that not many people are going to be huge fans of this. And it's got to be.
Can I read you this one? Catholic Nazi was this comment from Andy.
Oh, geez. You're reading while we're doing the show. No, yeah, they're not the best. But I don't think I hate them as much as you do, because to me, like, I would never be caught dead in an outfit like that, unless I was, of course, on the Olympic team, then you wear whatever. But screams like that. There was like that one preppy guy in your high school that always had the nicest clothes from Ralph Lauren. You knew his parents spent a whole lot of money on his outfits. And there's always that guy that was like and he won best dressed at the end of the whole school year. That's the guy that would wear something like this. Not the people representing our country for the Olympic team. But it'll be interesting to see everybody else's outfit, because everybody else has stupid outfits too.
Well, can you imagine? I was reading, Boyd Martin posted this on his Facebook page, and I was reading some of the comments there, and nobody can quite see Boyd Martin, the Australian, now-turned United States inventor, wearing that hat.
No, that hat's ridiculous. I wouldn't even hate the whole outfit if it weren't for the stupid French berets. Like, they look French.
Yep.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I agree with you. Yeah, but there is one thing wrong with that, is we're not France.
Exactly. Yeah, like a lot of people think it looks like military prep schools and sea captains, French sea captains. That's the look.
Yes. Well, Jennifer, what's coming up today?
On today's Wittier Than Usual, middle of the week Wednesday edition, we move smoothly out of the gate with the velvety voice of Horse and Country TV. Yes, Victoria Spicer is here, providing a bounty of equestrian interweb entertainment. And thereafter, a special listener with a story segment. This will teach you to call in or email into us and tell us how much you love the show. Anita Gilmore joins us with some firsthand Olympic insights. And finally, thehorse.com weasels your mind into a wanton paranoia once again. This time with the vividly visual conversation about wounds, and last but not least, born 245 years ago today, the inspiration for the face of the Grinch from Dr. Seuss and America's sixth president, John Quincy Adams. Look at his picture. He's the Grinch.
That was a stretch. That was ridiculous.
No, look at his face. He's the Grinch, I'm telling you.
Well, my Daily Winnie today is a birthday Daily Winnie.
Happy birthday.
Goes out to two of our listeners whose birthdays were yesterday, actually, but we weren't on, so I'll give it to them today. Abby Good from Michigan, and Donald, our friend from Australia. Happy birthday to both of you. And now it's your turn.
Well, my Daily Winnie goes out to our friend named Giant Clyde. Giant Clyde gets my Daily Winnie today, Glenn, because Giant Clyde is a 2,000-pound, 19-hand police horse England. I know. Talk about a big old horse that you're not going to be able to hide in a crowd from. 2,000-pound, 19-hand police horse. He gets my Daily Winnie because he is being peacefully and happily retired from his mounted police unit after 10 years of serving the people over in England. He's been 10 years of being a police horse, and he's retiring because of some arthritis starting to kick in a little bit. I mean, can you imagine 19-hand, 2,000 pounds? Yeah, he's going to have a little arthritis, especially after 10 years of work. But Giant Clyde, your service has been recognized here, my friend. Congratulations. Enjoy your fancy retirement.
I worked on the square in downtown Lancaster in Pennsylvania, and they had police horses that, four or five of them, that were always downtown. And I was outside the one time walking down to get lunch, and the one police horse just took off at a dead run after this guy, weaving it on the sidewalk and then out, weaving between the cars and traffic and the whole thing. Can you imagine if it was a 19-hand horse running you down in the streets? Oh, my God.
Oh. Well, that, and having talked to Officer Howard, who owns Jack, you know, my retired police horse, you can't hide from them. And the thing is, most people, you know, are scared of horses, and they see a horse coming, they just fall to the ground. I mean, but to see a 19-hand, 2,000-pound horse galloping you down, running you down, oh yeah, you'd lose it. You would lose your faculties, I think.
Yeah.
Was that a polite way to say you'd pee your pants?
That was very polite.
Thank you.
I think that usually refers to your mind, but I got the hint. I got the where you were going with that.
Yes.
How about you got breaking news on the racing front, too?
I know. This is so sad. And we'll have to see what happens, because it's not the end of a career. But Union Rags, the Belmont Stakes winner this year, and fan favorite. And it was your pick for the Belmont Stakes, wasn't it?
It was.
Come on.
Yeah.
It was everybody's pick. Union Rags, trained by Michael Matz, actually has suffered a tendon injury. They are saying that it's a minor tendon injury, but he will miss the rest of the 2012 season. And that's really sad, because they were so pointing towards the Breeders' Cup. He wanted Horse of the Year. He wanted Breeders' Cup champion. And that's where he was going with it. Sadly, he's not going to be able to compete for the rest of the year. And the owner, Phyllis Wyeth, is going to evaluate future plans for the son of Dixie Union. Now, obviously, he's been an amazing racehorse, winning over almost $2 million. But also, his bloodlines are ridiculous. So, you want to start a wager on whether they retire him or not?
Yeah, I'm voting retire him.
All right, I'll take the other side. They're going to retire him.
They're going
to
retire. Making babies.
I know he will, but he's so pretty. and it's just sad, because now he probably won't win Horse of the Year. But Union Rags is sidelined, and they will keep us up to date on his future plans.
Well, you know, it came out yesterday, speaking about racing, and I posted it on our Facebook page, that I'll have another, as was apparently sold for $10 million to Japan. And,
yeah.
You know, the owner is saying that his next best offers were from the United States were $5 million and $3 million. And my question I put out there to everybody was, you know, for that difference, $5 million difference, any one of us, if we're truly honest with ourselves, would have sold to Japan. I'm sorry, you're turning down $5 million so he goes to the United States? I don't think so. You know, $5 million goes a long way still. So, you know, but I want to put a stipulation on. I did say this, that when he's done breeding, I have the first rights to get him back, and he doesn't go to the glue factory or to somebody's plate. But you would sell them, too, for an extra $5 million to Japan, wouldn't you?
Well, they say the day that two idiots met is the day that somebody offered a lot of money for a horse and the day that that person turned the money down. Fill in the blank there, you know, like somebody offers you $20,000 for your horse. That's the day one idiot met another idiot who said no. So you can't say that you would definitely turn it down, that's for sure. But oh, it's just sad that he's leaving. And then he's been posting on Facebook, because I'm a friend of All Have Another on Facebook, and you can too if you just look him up. And I don't think it's his official page.
I think it's a fan page. Yeah, Yeah,
but it's somebody, like somebody posted, Glenn, I'll have another posted. My last days in America for my entire life will be days that I really remember and blah, blah, and the happiest days of my life. And it's so sad. Like, he doesn't want to go. He wants to stay in America. And he's like, I'm going to have to leave and go to Japan. And oh, my God, it's so pathetic.
Well, you know what, though? I'll have another. Maybe their Olympic outfits are better than ours in Japan. We'll see.
And Jennifer just typed, will he now start posting in Japanese? Oh, God, probably. Probably. No,
you know,
I don't know.
True, though. You know, you think about it, though. Think about horses that you've owned and that you've had, you know, that you've totally loved. You know, we always thought, what was that movie? I'm trying to think of the name of the movie that was with the guy and his wife, and this rich guy offered $1 million to sleep with the guy's wife. And sort of, you know, what's the price? What's everybody's price? So, you know, what is your price for that true horse that you absolutely love and all of that stuff? You know, what's the price? What's
your
price? I
thought you were going to ask me, what's my price to sleep with your wife?
No. What's your price, you know, to sell that horse that you absolutely, you know, your lifetime horse?
I don't know. Glenn, see, that's the problem with women, is it depends on the day. You know, it depends on the ride we've had. It depends on how he's behaving. It depends on his soundness. It depends on so many different things as far as what the price can be. There's days where I would sell Jet for $1. And there's days that no amount of money would come between me and that horse. So it just all depends. Jennifer, do you have an opinion on this, being a woman?
About?
The price for selling your lifetime horse.
Oh, good, because I thought she was going to ask me about the price for sleeping with me, and I'm going to go, wait a minute.
She never brought that up.
She never brought that up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is absolutely. I'm a hardcore. There's a price on every horse.
Well, and that's tough because what I was saying is the price changes by day. It depends on how your ride was and his soundness and his behavior and whether he nickered at you when you walked in the barn or whether he ignored you and put his butt to the door. You know, it just depends
for me, every day. Yeah, the price varied on how much hay I needed to buy. That's how it changed for me.
Yeah.
I think
nowadays,
it also depends on
no
how
kidding.
Broke you are. I think that has a lot to do with it, too. Yeah. All right, well, hey, this just came out yesterday from the U.S. Olympic team. Do you realize that for the first time in history, the number of female athletes on the United States Olympic team exceeds the number of male athletes for the first time in history?
Woo-hoo.
And there are going to be 269 women and 261 men. First time, you guys are taking the lead.
And I love that because honestly, it doesn't really matter. I love the fact that there's a lot of women, but men and women don't compete against each other in the Olympic Games, except for in one sport. Only one sport do men and women compete as equals. Can you tell me that sport, Glenn?
Let me think.
You don't know?
Equestrian.
Thank you, God. Jeez. Only one sport do men and women compete as equals, and that is the equestrian sport. So that's just women are.
That is not true. That is not true.
What's the other one?
They compete as equals in curling, too.
They do? Well, nobody cares about curling.
Let's rephrase it to one athletic sport.
It takes a lot of sweeping and curling, Glenn. Yeah, I didn't know women and men competed equals. I think maybe I was just thinking Summer Olympic Games you think about like table tennis and judo and track and field, it's very separate. So I do love the fact that there are more women. I don't know why that is the case, because maybe it's just more women on the equestrian team. Who knows?
Well, here's some more facts for this year's United States team. Michael Phelps, who has already won 14 Olympic medals, is one of 228 athletes returning to the Games this year that had been there before. Among those were 124 who already have medals and 76 who had gold medals. So we have 76 gold medalists returning. Young and old, guess who? What? Who's this year's oldest American athlete?
I love this. I already know this, but this is fantastic, and it makes me proud. Go ahead.
Karen O'Connor. Karen O'Connor, inventor Karen O'Connor, and wife of David O'Connor, is the oldest at 54. 54 years old.
Girl power.
Is,
whoop, whoop.
The youngest is a girl, too. 15-year-old swimmer Katie Ledecky is in there. A basketball player, the tallest competitor on the U.S. team, is 7'1". Tyson.
He's a basketball player? No, don't say.
Now, gymnast Gabby Douglas is one of the three shortest Americans at 4'11". Let's get those two side by side for a picture. That would be good. Let me see here. There are 53 dads and 11 moms on the team. Two sets of twins are competing this year for the United States, Bob and Mike Bryan in tennis and Grant and Ross James in rowing. Rowing is another one of those sports, Jamie, that we talk about. Rowing is that sport that you just only watch during the Olympics. I like watching rowing during the Olympics, but do we ever see it any other time? No. Ever.
The only time I've seen rowing not in the Olympics was in that Facebook movie.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
That's the only time. Yeah, that is one of those sports that you never watch. Hey, I got some fun facts about the horses, the equestrian team, if I can go through some of those. And we're waiting on Victoria. Is she here yet?
No, she's not here yet.
All right, well, then we'll just keep on going with this. Because did you know that two of the horses, two different sets of horses are half siblings? Did you know that Rafalka, of course, very famous now, Rafalka dressage team, and Twizzle, who was Will Coleman's event horse, they have the same sire. Both of them are sired by the Hanoverian stallion Argentinius. And Twizzle is out of a thoroughbred mare, and of course, Rafalka is out of a Hanoverian mare. So same bloodline for dressage and eventing. And then it goes on that Mr. Medicott, which is a Karen O'Connor's horse. Well, no, is Mr. Medicott Karen? Yeah. And Flexible are by the same horse, Irish sport horse Cruising. And I think Flexible is one of the show jumping teams. Is that correct there?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, there are only two gray horses on the Olympic team, and those, do you have any guesses? Oh, I couldn't even guess. Ringwood Magister, which is Tiana Kudre's horse, and then Antares F, who is almost completely white, and let's see what else do I have for you. One of the horses has his own vineyard and wine named after him. One of the horses has its own vineyard, and the wine is called Ravel. no surprise there, I guess. let's see. BZ Madden and McLean Ward were in the same jump off for individual bronze at the 2008 Olympics, and they both found a shortcut on course through the decorations that proved to be the winning route for Madden because Ward had the last fence down. I don't know why that's his That's interesting. But BZ Madden is a diehard Green Bay Packers fan. Coral Reef Viavolo, that's the horse's name. Coral Reef Viavolo is the smallest horse on the Olympic team, standing at 15'2", while Ravel is the biggest horse at over 17 hands. So there you go.
15'2 is the smallest now. Wow. Used to be you'd get eventers that were, you know, smaller than that, 15-hand range.
Yeah, not so much anymore for the Olympics. The only one, oh, bless his heart, Teddy O'Connor. Man, he would have been amazing.
Yeah, that's true. And I also wanted to mention
Let me pour a little out.
Get...
Go ahead.
What's that? Oh, yeah, what was that? Let me, what?
I said I gotta pour a little out, you know, for my homie, my dead homie. You know, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to mention, everybody, that the chat room is open. You can find it by going to blogtalkradio.com and clicking on Horses in the Morning. You'll see the listener chat room is open if you want to jump in there. And also, there was a really neat story that was posted by one of our listeners on our Facebook page yesterday. And I'm trying to find it here, and now I can't find it. But I can't figure out who posted it. I'm sorry. They said they would put it as their daily Winnie if they had one. And it's about this big sorrel coat named Declan. What happened was, there's an 8-year-old registered paint named Maya became the mother of a sorrel coat colt named Declan. She was brought to the farm as a foal, and this mama took over this colt, and, you know, raised it and stuff. It was she was a good foster mama. She became a foster mama. Well, 2 months later, Maya proved how much of a good mama she was, because on July 2nd, the barn caught fire. And Maya obviously couldn't stop the fire and couldn't get out, and she had this baby beside her. So what she did in the pen that they were standing in, because they couldn't get away from the fire, she actually stood between the fire and the foal and took the brunt of the flames and the burning, and she protected that foal while she was being burned. They both lived. The foal really didn't have much wrong with it at all, really just minor burns. Mama, and you see the pictures there, the whole side of her body was burned. She lived. She got through it, but she protected that foal and stood between the fire flames and the baby. And she was an adopted mama. It wasn't her baby. So, you know, just goes to prove that animals get it too. And, you know, apparently she'll be okay, but, boy, she's skin missing, that's for sure.
That is a great story. She just had to take care of her baby. I want to comment on another Facebook post by a listener, because, you know, Glenn, you're constantly trying to get me to go see scary movies. And I might go see Snow White and the Huntsman now that I saw Thor and I realized what the Huntsman guy looks like. Woohoo! Oh, my God. What's his name? He is so good looking. So he's in the movie, Snow White and the Huntsman, and you were trying to get me to go see Snow White and the Huntsman, telling me to go by myself because Chad was out of town, and that it wasn't scary. And Lisa Lemke came to the rescue because she let me know that it is terrifying, it is very scary, and I should definitely not go by myself. And then you started in on, why did you ruin it? I wanted her to be scared, and I wanted to hear all about it, blah, blah, blah. Well, I've gotten a new movie recommendation by listener Lisa, and she says, Jamie, I just wanted to pass along a recommendation for a Lisa-certified non-scary movie, Magic Mike. She says it's a truly beautiful film and that you too should go see it because she would like to hear a joint review on Horses in the Morning. What do you think?
Yeah. Not so much. I have seen the trailer for Magic Mike, and going to see a movie about a male stripper is not my idea of fun. Sorry.
It's not just one male stripper. Okay, I mean, seriously, Matthew McConaughey is standing on stage and says, the law says y'all ain't allowed to touch in here. I see a bunch of lawbreakers. Oh, my God, what a line. It's Matthew.
Let me guess, you've convinced your fighter pilot husband, Chad, to go see the movie about male strippers.
No, he won't go with me at all. That's why I need somebody to go in. He's like, I can't even ask. Like, he watches it, and he's like, every time the thing comes on, he's like, ugh. And I'm like, honey, don't hate the player, hate the game, okay? Plenty of movies objectify women. It is about time. We had a movie that came out that objectified men. It is time. But I would like to point out, I've been watching the news and reading stories about this. And do you know what the phenomenon that is taking over at this movie, Glenn? Besides women standing in line for like a mile before it actually starts, they line up before it. However, women are going to this movie dressed to the nines. Like they're going to the club. High heels, skimpy little outfits, got their makeup done, got their hair did. And I want to walk up to them and point out that, you know, it is a movie. Like, they're on a screen. They're not in real life right in front of you. It's a movie.
Hey,
they're getting all dressed up
like they're
going to
checked, and this movie's playing at 6:15 tonight. You want to go see it? No comment.
She's on the phone. Of course she wants to go see it. Of course she does. And I think she and I should go see it together. Lisa, I just want to let you know that I will do my due diligence. At some point, I will go see that movie. I just have been competing the past few weekends and have been unable to. And I also have a husband who will not go with me. And I'm kind of live out in the country, and my friends don't really live anywhere close. So that's the main problem. But I'll see what I can do. And I'll get you that review, because I would like to review it. Mm-hmm.
I know. You're just going to suffer your way through it. It's going to be awful.
For the show. It's for the show. And if I do a review on the show, then I can write off the ticket price.
And this is probably one movie, you know, all the naked guys you want to see on the big screen.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is not a Netflix.
There's lots of bad puns and things we could do here, but I think we'll just go on now. I really thought you were going to pick up on the big screen thing, but you didn't.
I've already said, I said H-E double hockey sticks already once. I need to keep it clean.
I'm glad to see that on the whole entire Horse Radio Network, after over 2,500 episodes, I'm not the only one that swore now. You at least jumped in and helped out.
I've sworn a couple times. The professional broadcaster that I am.
Yes. Well, let's do our commercial here and get to our first guest of the day. But first, we have to talk to you about, let me see what's next on the lineup. Oh, my page is not working here. Equity Manufacturing. You know, Equity Manufacturing, they have not only the best manure forks in the world, but they also have other products. What's that?
I said they're the best.
They're the best. But they also have other products I'm trying to tell everybody about, and one of them is the Equity Quick Studs. And this is absolutely perfect considering the last conversation we just had. So these are not that kind of stud. You will not find the Equity Quick Studs in the movie Magic Mike at all. They probably will not appear because they have a different purpose.
They're not quick. They're not quick. Sorry, carry on. That's wrong. I need to go to bed.
The vinyl rails, if you have vinyl rail fencing, these are what you use to connect poly tape or poly rope, actually poly rope, more than likely if you have vinyl rail fencing, and you want to keep the horses from sticking their heads through your vinyl rail fencing and knocking them off and bending them and, you know, trying to get to the grass is greener on the other side. What you can do is take these little adapters and you stick them on the vinyl rail fence, and they will allow you to put a hot wire up. So they allow you to put a hot wire up either at the top to keep the horses from talking to each other or at the bottom to keep them from sticking their heads through the rails. And they're very inexpensively priced. You can get like 100 of them for very little money, like $13, and you can solve that problem that some people with the poly rails have, and that is finding an adapter to put up a hot wire. Well, they do that for you right at equitymfg.com. And don't forget, for the best, I'm just saying, you know, all of us at the Horse Radio Network use it. For the best manure forks around, go to equitymfg.com and take a look at the options there. You're going to love them. They're the only ones we use now. Matter of fact, Jennifer went to use a different one the other day, and she something happened, and she said, oh, I should have used the Equity. I forget what it was. Did you have a flicking problem? Was it the flicking problem?
It was the flick.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
You don't have a flicking problem with the Equity manure fork.
I know, but you had put the Equity fork where it didn't belong, and I couldn't find it, and I just grabbed another one, and I went out to the paddock. And when I came back in, I had to comb the manure out of my hair.
Yeah. See, that's the problem. You don't. Because there's a little suspension system built into the flex and fork, you don't get the flicking problem. And it's true.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. So check it out. Equitymfg.com. Well, we're going to go to our first guest now. And I found Anita Gilmore, because she actually wrote to me on Facebook and asked a question about one of the shows. She's a listener to the Horse Radio Network. And we always say that every listener has a story. Well, then I went to her Facebook page and I went to her website and I discovered that this particular listener has a very interesting story and makes her kind of unique, because there's not too many people that have competed at the Olympics. And Anita did that for Canada in 1996 in Atlanta. Good morning, Anita.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for dropping me that note last week that allowed me to find you.
Oh, no problem.
Now, you actually are at Top Notch Farms up there in Canada, and you competed in the 96 Olympics. Tell us about that experience, a little bit about your horse that you had.
It was a great experience. I still have my horse. He's a Mexican thoroughbred, and he's 27 now. He raced about 42 races before I got him, so he was a successful racehorse and then became a successful event horse. It was a great experience. I actually rode for Hungary, though. I didn't ride for Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
realize
that.
Yeah, I rode for Hungary. And I was their only individual, and I finished 19th in Atlanta.
What's it like right now for the athletes that are over there? They've all, right now, their horses are all arriving, or they have arrived, and they're 2 weeks before the start of their events. What's it like for them now? Is this kind of a quiet time that they're just trying to get through? And does that quiet time make you more nervous? You know, tell us a little bit about that pre-time.
Yeah, it's a quiet time, and yes, it does make you more nervous, I would say, for sure it does, because we're used to keeping busy and riding more than just one horse. So, but, you know, you get a little extra bonding time with that particular horse, and yeah, you just have to keep focused and keep doing what you know how to do, and you know, it's, as the saying goes, it's another day at the office. It's a big office board meeting, but it's another day at the office.
What was the moment when it hit you? Every athlete I've heard that's been to the Olympics say there was a moment that, you know, they knew they were going to the Olympics, but there was a moment that it truly hit you and it sunk in.
When I jumped the first fence on cross country. That's kind of when I went, oh my God, I'm at the Olympics.
That's a heck of a time to going at full dead gallop. That's a heck of a time for it to dawn on.
Yeah.
And you know what,
time to enjoy it at that point.
And what's amazing is you're a true eventer, because that did not hit you when you were doing your dressage test beforehand. But screw dressage, but my God, I'm on cross country now. Now it hits me.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a great experience, though.
What do you think, you know, of the whole thing about being there and, you know, I guess being a part of the opening ceremonies and just the whole entire experience? What is the one thing that you enjoyed, aside from competing, that you enjoyed the most about kind of just being in the atmosphere of the Olympics?
I didn't get to spend a bunch of time in the Olympic Village, just because in Atlanta it was pretty far away from where the barns were, so I ended up staying closer to the facility. But it was the one night that I did spend in the Village was great, just seeing all the different athletes and all the different nationalities, and that was a great experience. The opening ceremonies was also a great experience, just walking down into the stadium was really cool, just taking part and seeing all at the barn, seeing all the other great riders and all the legends that you've read about forever, and, you know, actually being in their company, that was pretty amazing.
Now, there's a book, Jamie, that just came out, and it's causing quite a stir, because it's a book about what goes on where the athletes stay at the Olympic Village at all the different Olympics, and it was an interesting. I read a synopsis of it, and boy, Anita, that's kind of a wild place in there with the athletes.
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting. But like I said, I really only got to spend. I only spent one night there, because then it was just too far away from the stabling, so I didn't get to take advantage of that enough.
Really?
There's a little
was
partying
Harvey.
That goes on.
I was focused. I was preparing for my competition.
Now, it begs the question, because I know I'm from Atlanta, and it was a big deal to have the Olympic Village downtown on the Georgia Tech campus, but the eventing or any of the equestrian sports were very far east, about 45 minutes east of Atlanta. So if you're supposed to stay in the Olympic Village, but you didn't, where did you stay?
Actually, my parents came, and I stayed in a hotel room with them, just close by.
Is that a common thing with the horse people?
Yeah, most people didn't stay in the village. Most people stayed close by because it was just too far. And then with the traffic and the buses, and it just became too difficult.
And from what I understand in London, it's going to be similar to that the equestrians are going to be staying separate from the Olympic Village because it's too far. It's the same city, but it's too far. It takes too long to get from point A to point B, so they're going to be staying down near where the horses are.
Yeah, I thought I heard that they were staying because it was closer that they were able to stay in the village, but I'm not
That's
sure.
That's not what I heard last week. No,
oh, okay.
I think they're going to be down closer. I don't know. I could be wrong about
and
that.
And it's unfortunate to miss out on that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you're there to compete and compete at your best. So, you know, if that entails not staying in the village and staying closer, then I guess that's what you have to do.
Was there a moment? Was there a panic time? Was there a time where panic set in for you? Or are you one that's pretty good at controlling that?
I would say pre-competition, like leading up to it, is where you're just sort of waiting for the ball to drop and waiting for something to go wrong. And then once you're there, you're pretty much in the game.
You're just in the zone. It's another competition.
You try and convince yourself that, yeah.
That's funny. And what are you doing now? What's your life like now?
I still ride and train. I have a couple of FEI event horses that I'm bringing along. One's at intermediate level, and the other's at just did his first one star, and they're looking pretty good. So hopefully one of those will pan out and compete at the four-star level. And then I import horses from Holland and sell them. So I bring them over and then resell them. Mainly jumpers, but I did have the horse that Doug Payne rode and was quite successful with, Camaralingo. I sold him to Kristen Michalowski, and then Doug rode that horse for her for a while. So, yeah, that's what
Warm
I'm
Bloods?
Doing now. Yeah, mainly Dutch Warm Bloods, yeah.
Do you ever do thoroughbreds anymore?
I do. Here and there. I actually break some thoroughbreds for I have a client that races them, and I in the fall they come in and I break them and get them ready to go to the track. I really love thoroughbreds. Like the horse I rode at the Olympics was the thoroughbred, and I think they're a little bit harder to find because now they can drop them down to claiming races and get rid of them that way rather than, you know, sell them on. But if I found a good thoroughbred, I'd definitely go with that.
Well, terrific. We certainly appreciate you joining us today and giving us a little insight of what it's like to go to the Olympics and to be part of that. Would you say it's still, you know, it's still something you think about a lot? Once you're an Olympian, do you wear that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, that's still something that I'm striving to get back to and, you know, do better. If I get back there, you know, hopefully I'll have more experience and I can place better than 19th. So that's something that I strive for.
Well, terrific. Well, good luck with that. We'll keep an eye on you. And thank you so much also for listening to the shows. We appreciate that. It's Anita Gilmore. Her website is topnotchfarms.ca. If you want to check it out, it's topnotchfarms.ca. Thank you, Anita.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Oh, you know, before you go, one other thing is I noticed that, you know, one of our title sponsors here on Horses in the Morning is Omega Alpha, and I noticed that you're an Omega Alpha rider.
I am. I've been using their products for about 10 years, and they're wonderful products, and they're great people to deal with. Dr. Chang is so knowledgeable and very helpful, and so is Patty. And I find a big difference with my horses on their products.
Is there a product, one particular product that you, you know, you focus on and you use all the time?
I use anti-flam because the ground here in Canada lately has been really hard, so I think that that just helps take the sting out of their feet a little bit. And I use GastroFX on a daily basis for both of my competition horses, and I use Sinuex, and I also use Biotic 8.
I know that Jamie's used Biotic 8 on some of her horses as well. Well, we appreciate you joining us again. Thank you so much. And by the way, that's omegaalphaequine.com if you want to check out those products that Anita just talked about. Good luck.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anita.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, I think we're trying to, I think we might have Victoria on here who's been having trouble connecting here this morning. Let's give her a try and see if she's there. Victoria, is that you?
It is indeed. Hello.
Good morning.
Yay!
Good morning. I've reverted to my cell phone. Skype didn't want to play ball with me today, so yes.
Well, we
That's
appreciate
okay.
the dedication.
Yes. And you can go ahead and send the cell phone bill to Glenn at horseradionetwork.com and forward that on to him.
So, I'm sure I will.
Well, I know.
Uh-oh. She just
no!
went away.
Well, at least we got to hear her dulcet tones for just a moment.
That's all we get.
That's it. She's gone. Bummer. Well, what the heck. Let's talk about what she was going to talk about. Tell us about Charlotte, Glenn. You wanted to talk about Charlotte Desjardins.
Well, Charlotte Desjardins actually broke a record in dressage, in freestyle, with a 90% in freestyle, which is kind of unheard of. And she did that over the weekend at a show that I can't find because I can't find my notes. She's back. Thank God. Are you there?
Take two. Sorry. It went very warped. I hope I haven't deafened all your listeners.
Yes. Thank God. You know, Jamie was starting to ask me about your news stories, and I was just faking it. So.
Yes, apparently a horse went to the shops, and that didn't really happen. We don't really have a news story about that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you do have, because you've got some breaking news. Well, I just asked Glenn about Charlotte Desjardins. How do you say her name?
Desjardins.
Okay, I was
it's
right.
It's a little bit French.
Well, tell us about this record that she just broke.
She keeps breaking records everywhere she goes. She broke the world record for the Grand Prix Special in Hagen back in April. And then she debuted her new freestyle routine at the weekend at just a national show that was held at Hartbury College in Gloucestershire. And she has had this amazing new freestyle routine designed by Tom Hunt. And it's very kind of British with James Bond themes and Big Ben chimes. And she scored over 90% to break a new British record. So very impressive and quite a good omen just before the Olympics.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, when you talk about the Olympics, there is some shocking news that we touched upon, but I'm sure you guys have a little bit more information about Totalist not being in the Olympics.
Yeah, we ran a story last week saying that his place is in doubt because apparently Matthias Rath has got
mono.
And
yes,
I think so. And so he was missing the final selection trial, and the rules were quite strict that if you didn't compete, you weren't going to be up for selection. So we kind of ran this news story saying, is he going to be there? His place is in jeopardy. And then suddenly it was not so much, is he going to be there? But no, he's definitely not going to be there. And he's not been selected for the team, which is just incredible. The best horse in the world, and he won't be at the Olympics.
Doesn't it seem like in Germany, there should be at least one other person who could at least take him to the Olympics? I mean, really?
You'd think so. They could have got Isabel Ver to sit on him and spin him around. It was quite funny, the people who were volunteering to ride him following
oh,
his...
Really?
I saw, I think, event rider Dan Jocelyn was quite keen to take on the ride, so that was one person. And apparently, Michael Whittaker, who had a big win in Aachen, he won the Grand Prix, apparently he was so confident that he was going to win that he wrote his name on marker pen on the winner's board the night before the competition and put his horse's name down as Totilus. So I don't know what's going on. but Michael Whittaker is taking him show jumping, so that maybe that's why he's missing the Olympics.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, heck, I'd volunteer. I mean, who wouldn't? So, but why... Do you have any sense of why nobody else would take him? I mean, is it just that much of a rider change? Is that big of a deal? Because I know in eventing, people change horses all the time. Like, say, you know, Buck Davison breaks his collarbone. Well, then, you know, his dad can ride the horse. People do that a lot more, I guess, maybe in other sports.
I presume, and this probably would have to come from an absolute dressage expert, but I presume they have to have several qualifying scores at a certain level to be eligible for the Olympics, and there just isn't enough time to get those. And as the former dressage editor of Horse and Hound pointed out to me when we were discussing it, that Totilus obviously doesn't react that well to new riders, and it does take some time for a partnership to gel. And so they decided, you know, wasn't enough time to get somebody else up to speed, I guess.
Well, it's just that the whole thing kind of is heartbreaking because the whole world loves to watch that horse in the horse world anyway. So definitely tough that it's not going to be there. Now, back to Horse and Country, because you guys are going to do something very special for the Olympics. Tell us what that is.
We are indeed. We're going to run a daily chat show, which is because we won't be broadcasting any of the games, because over here it's the BBC that will be showing the action. But outside of the park, we'll be there sitting with a host of top riders every day, just discussing what's been going on, who's going to be doing the winning the next day, and discussing some of the highs and lows. So we're going to have Jenny Riddle, who you've spoken to before on this show. She's going to present the show alongside three of our sort of most talented riders in the different disciplines, and it will be on every single day of the games at 10 o'clock at night.
So basically you can keep up to date on pretty much everything right on Horse and Country. And I'm shocked that the BBC got it over you guys. What the heck?
I know them, and I think their budget was just a little bit higher than us. And apparently, like, they're more keen to show athletics, whereas we would have just shown equestrian events, and that didn't go down too well. we won't be showing any of the action, but I think it will still be a great show, and I'm really excited about it.
Now, before we let you go, there is a video of the week that we should let everybody know about. And I just become more and more a fan of this woman every time we talk about her.
Yes, indeed. I mean, not everybody's heard of Zara Phillips, but not everybody's heard of her horse, High Kingdom. He was a little bit of a kind of surprise inclusion in the team for some people. But if you watch this video, you can see that he really is quite an impressive horse. And we've got him and Zara in action at Barbary Castle, which was held recently. So you can check out their show jumping and eventing rounds and, see him in action.
Well, that is horseandcountry.tv. Please go check it out. Watch all the videos on there. Great if you're sitting at work right now and you're not working, go to horseandcountry.tv and check out all the videos there. And, of course, Victoria, thank you so much for joining us. Get off that cell phone, hang up, and send the one.
I will do. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. She's so pissed.
Phew, got
Love
that
her.
One in. I know.
Yeah. She's just in the nick
Why
of time.
Isn't she doing that talk show, Jenny Riddle? We want Victoria.
I know. She's the producer, though. There's got to be somebody behind, running the magic. Just ask Jennifer.
Yes, I guess. That's true. We have our own magic maker right there. Our own Jennifer.
Magic
well, let's
Mike,
take a
what?
Listen. Let's take a listen to Above the Timberline. Your choice for today by your boyfriend.
Jared Rogerson.
The city offers you convenience, and this old mountain offers you no lenience. But it's the life I choose to lead. Peace of mind's what I receive. I make my home above the timberline, in my saddlebags. Who knows what you'll find? On my trusty steed, I've got everything I need. Up here on the Great Divide, I went to college searching for my way. Textbooks for rodeo seemed a pretty even trade. Well, I guess fate can handle each and every day. Wouldn't have it any other way. Now I make my home above the timberline, in my saddlebags. Who knows what you'll find? On my trusty steed, I've got everything I need. Up here on the Great Divide, there's bighorn sheep. Look, there's an eagle flying down there. We got fish to eat, and up here there ain't no bear. It's the place that I reside, up above the timberline. Fate's in charge of every day. Wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, that's Above the Timberline with Jared Rogerson, and you can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen over there in the producer chair today, and this show today is partly sponsored by Field Guardian Fence. You can find them at fieldguardian.com. If you're looking for putting up a poly tape fence or a poly rope fence, then they have everything that you need. It's a simple, easy process. You just send them a little diagram. You draw out a little diagram, and you email it on over to them, and they'll put together exactly what you need, the number of insulators, the number of gates, the amount of fencing, and they'll quote it, and they'll get you a price that's unbelievable and a quality fencing product that's made in the United States. So check out fieldguardian.com for all your poly tape or poly rope fencing needs. Fieldguardian.com. Well, Jamie, we're waiting here. We're going to do the horse.com next.
And it's going to be good.
Yeah, gross. It's going to be gross. It's about wounds and gore.
Yes, I love it. But I had what? Sorry, I interrupted you.
You had a side saddle story, which we don't see too often.
Oh my gosh, these women are crazy. There are some crazy women out there, and I don't know what else to say about them than they are crazy. There is a group of women that are in training right now to break the high jump record for side saddle. They are at the Leaping Ladies competition at the National Show Jumping Show at Aintree. It's going to be on July 28th.
Leaping Ladies.
Yes, the Leaping Ladies. They're going to ask if they're brave enough to go higher than the 6 foot 6 inches record set by Esther Stacy in Sydney. In check out this. The record has been held since 1915. A woman side saddle jumped 6 foot six. That's absolutely crazy. And I guess some of all these women are very tough, and they ride side saddle all the time. One of them is Emma Brown. She has a fox hunted and done jumpers. Another lady, Susan Oakes, is from Ireland, is going to has borrowed a Grand Prix show jumper to try to get this done. Now, the thing is, you borrow a Grand Prix show jumper, still doesn't know if it can be ridden side saddle. So you got to like teach this thing to jump different, I guess, than it. So the Guinness Book of World Records is going to be there. They have applied for the whole Guinness thing to try to break the record attempt. And so we'll see what happens. But tough ladies, round of applause, man. That's awesome.
I know Jennifer has tried to contact one of them, so maybe we can get one of them on the show. That would be fun. That'd be fun to talk to them. See what kind of gumption it takes to do that side saddle. That's pretty cool. Let's talk to our friends over at the Corey Gross Place.
Time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And we may actually do it this week, which is really exciting because we've had some really nice, you know, PG for Glenn. He talks about rescuing horses and prevention and blah, blah, blah. But now we're going to get down to the gore. And it's been a while, Michelle. Good morning, by the way.
Good morning. Good morning. Yeah, has Glenn gotten his July issue of The Horse yet?
No.
Glenn, yeah. No?
No, you haven't seen the cover. The cover, we have a nice gash that's getting cleaned out on the cover. We have some really nasty, gory pictures.
So why would you put
that on the cover of a magazine that you're trying to sell to people?
You know, we thought it was pretty tame. We thought it was pretty tame. It's a couple-inch laceration. It's not too bad. It's, you know, how many times have you gone out and found your horse with... What do you do when you go out, Glenn, and your horse is bleeding? Do
you run into
Jennifer?
Your wife and say, go fix the horse. That's what you do.
Okay.
The horse is bleeding. I don't do blood. Go handle it. And then she runs it out and she fixes it. It's very simple.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a nice system worked out, because those of us who have to go out and deal with these things, I'm going to knock on wood, because I was just thinking about it. I haven't had a good wound in a long time, so I haven't had to clean one up. But, yeah, we have in – what's that?
I said, you better knock, girl, right
I
now.
I did. I knocked. It's the solid wood desk. I gave a good knock. If you have the July issue, we have some great information on treating wounds, some nasty bloody pictures of different wounds. We also have a burn article in there, which is pretty frightening. The pictures, actually, Glenn, they kind of make me go, ooh. So when you get that, check that out.
This is exactly why I have never turned the cover on the Horse magazine. Ever.
We give you real pictures. This is the stuff that we horse owners, we go out there and that's what we find. Our horses bleeding and gashed and blood squirting, and you have to toughen up and do it, unless you have Jennifer around.
You know, Michelle, the horses never tell us what happened. I have asked, what did you do? Where did you do this from? And they never answer. They just sit there and bleed.
I can think of one horse that I was taking care of that, you know, he ripped his face open over his eye, you know, blood and nastiness, and looked everywhere to figure out where he had done that, because, you know, you want to prevent that from happening. Never did find what he did, such a horrible wound on his face. He was actually a horse that was on trial. It was a day into him being...
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, and then you have to call someone, your horse that's been here for a day just ripped his face open, so...
Oh, my gosh.
But
yeah,
so
I don't know what I would do. Ugh, gross. And I did find the cover of thehorse.com. If you go to thehorse.com, down at the bottom where it says current issue, Glenn, it's called Gouges and Gashes. So you can see the picture of the veterinarian actually blocking the wound right now, sticking a needle into the cut. So do you want me to post that, Glenn?
No, I see it. It's okay. She's fine. Can't believe you put that in the cover of a magazine.
That's an awesome photo. Awesome. And we hear Dr. Jones. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. How's Jeff doing?
Oh, I'm so frustrated. You know, he's got another competition this weekend. Thank you for asking, by the way. And he's not lame, but he's short on that leg. And he ended up hitting his medial heel. So I'm not quite sure what to do. I'm going to video myself lunging him today. So I'm going to have the video camera, and he's going to go around on the lunge line. And I'm going to email that to my vet, who is an hour and a half away, and see what he says. Maybe I should send it to you, too, get your opinion.
God. I think your vet will be just fine.
You're like, no, I called him and I was like, dude, listen, here's what's happening. I'm like, he's not off, but I just want you to give me the thumbs up or thumbs down. He's like, okay, so basically you want me to make the decision for you. Why didn't you just tell me, just say yes or no? And he's like, I don't even need to see the horse because you don't care what I'm going to say anyway. I'm like, I want you to be the bad guy. I don't want to be the bad guy. So hopefully by today he'll be fine and he'll be totally no problem. I have bumped him down to novice because I don't think it's fair to send him on his first training having like basically 2 weeks off beforehand. So we took a lot of the pressure off. Hopefully he'll be sound and he'll get to go. Otherwise, Joe Montana is going to go do pre-comp again.
Well, Jamie, I'm going to send you some soundness jingles because my horse was off on Friday, lame, and as of yesterday, he is fixed, and I have a show next weekend, my first show of the year, so I'll send some of that soundness your way because I was sweating it. I already paid for my hotel.
Oh, yeah.
We have to go to the show.
Yeah, they won't give you refunds after
no.
certain date. So I like to call them pony prayers. So thank you for your pony prayers.
Okay.
Really,
you're welcome.
Now,
so, and knock on some more wood. So.
Yes, I'll do that right now, too. So Dr. Jones, we're going to get into a little bit of grossing Glenn out today, we've decided.
Oh, you guys are terrible. I love it.
She's on my side. I live in her state now, and she jumps right in, and she's on my side. Thank you, Dr. Jones.
So Dr. Jones, you know, we have this article about treating wounds in the July issue of The Horse. Can you tell us a little bit about what a wound is, how you define a wound in a horse?
Basically, you find that the surface area, I'd say surface area because it's not necessarily always skin, but the surface area has been broken by something or some other animal. So you can have a wound on the inside of the mouth, and it's not necessarily the skin. It's mucous membranes and the mucus covering inside the mouth, and that would be considered a wound. In fact, we have a wonderful summer sore client this year that has a summer sore in the corners of the mouth that the cut came from the bit, and next thing you know, fly landed, laid an egg in there, and had a summer sore.
Ew.
So it can be, you know, inside the mouth, it can be inside the vulva, and it can be on the legs, it can be on the skin, any kind of cut or break in the skin area.
Okay. And so we're usually dealing with abrasions, which would be?
Skin in your knee. Basically, they just shaved off the skin, off the top surface.
Okay. And then punctures and lacerations, which are a little bit scarier than those abrasions, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, most abrasions a vet hardly ever see. You know, maybe a new green owner might call you out for that, but most people will go to the feed store, they'll peruse the aisleway, grab something off the shelf and start treating it themselves. I tell people, for abrasions, treat it like your kids' abrasions or yourself if you don't have kids. How would you want to treat that abrasion, you know, with your child? Would you want to put something very caustic on it and have it burn it? No, probably not. You'd want to clean it up with some antibacterial and put some antibacterial ointments on there, that kind of thing. So,
Okay. And what about those punctures and lacerations?
Those are a bit more difficult. Those should probably all be seen by a veterinarian, especially the punctures. And a lot of times the punctures can be as small as size of a pen or a pencil. And that puncture that's created can scab over, and you think, oh, my horse just poked itself on the fence or something, and you think it's just skin deep, and it could be a lot deeper than just the skin. So you clean off the scab and you put a little ointment on it, and you know, you don't think anything of it, but that ointment is covering up the hole, not allowing drainage, and it creates a nice little pocket or abscess. So all punctures, I say, need to be seen by a veterinarian, because they can create more problems deeper underneath the skin or into the muscle layers that you don't know about, and you'll have a bigger problem down the line.
Now, let me jump in here, because being the vet tech and actually being a client that has had this happen as well, there is nothing more bizarre than, oh, he's got a little cut, but it just won't heal. Will you look at it? And then all of a sudden the vet takes out these hemostats, these big giant, you know, metal things, and sticks it into the wound, and it disappears 6 inches into their skin. And, oh, God, oh. You just had no idea that it was that deep. So that is why you do need to call the vet, because they go a little further than we do.
Exactly. And, you know, the hemostats are kind of scary to look at. I use a culturette a lot of times because it's got a little soft, fluffy end to it, so it looks a little kinder. And I'll use that to probe the wounds. If I need something a bit firmer, you know, to make sure I'm getting to the very extent of it, then you go to something a little bit more metal, yeah. But the other source of that culturette, too, is to take a culture. A lot of times we bypass cultures, we slap the horse on SMZs and carry on, that kind of thing. I am finding more and more of my wounds do not respond to SMZs anymore because there's a lot of resistance out there. So culturing is a good idea to do when they first see that wound. And before you clean it all up, you might want to take a culture of all the nastiness that's being exuded out of that wound area.
Okay. Yeah, so horse owner goes out, and it always happens in the morning. It's always when you go out to feed in the morning that you find some kind of wound. So you go out there, you look, what is the most important thing for me to do after I see it? Glenn goes and gets Jennifer to help him out. What should the rest of us do when we see?
Well, you know, Jen's lucky because she's got a friend, you know, and Glenn, even though he doesn't like to look at the wounds, but she can at least hopefully remain calm a little bit with him. But having a friend there always helps you out to help you remain calm. But the first thing you should do is, you know, assess, is the animal doing okay? Because we focus so much on the wounds, we don't know, is the wound all the way down to the bone, and the bone get broken? Is the animal bearing weight on that leg? Is the animal lethargic because you see blood dripping out of the wound and there's blood on the sock or on the hoof, but the horse is in the pasture, did it bleed out somewhere else and has a lot of blood loss? So is the horse acting normal? Of course they're not, they're going to be in pain, but are they even more lethargic than they normally are? So that's the first thing, is assess that. Secondly, I tell my clients to take temperatures while I'm trying to get my stuff together and head out there. So having a thermometer, getting temperature, see if it's already started to get infected and it's affecting the horse, it was another good thing to do. And then, of course, what do you want to do to clean it up is always what the clients will ask. And this is, of course, a wound that's got dried blood and such. And I always tell them dilute betadine or dilute chlorhexidine and some water is good to clean up the wound if they feel comfortable doing that. You can take a hose to it if it's a large area, but I'm just not huge on that because there's bacteria at the end of the hose that you're going to drive up into the wound if it's a puncture and such. And, of course, the most important thing is if it's bleeding, you want to try to stop the bleeding. And the thing they teach you in the human world, it's the same goes in the animal world, is you place a bandage on top, you wrap that, and you, if it bleeds through that, you place another bandage on top of that and wrap on top of that. You don't keep ripping the bandage off that you have, because if you do that, then you're going to be continually breaking the clot that's occurring on the surface of the wound that will help the horse stop bleeding.
Okay. And you mentioned SMZs, which are an oral antibiotic, and you also mentioned all the bacteria that are in these. How often do our horses need an oral antibiotic to treat a wound?
It depends on how deep it is and how old the wound is. I've been out on ranches where the wound probably wasn't caught for 24 hours, and it's a large gaping wound of like the chest area, and it's, you know, muscles torn or cut, you know, so you probably know that there's a lot of little pockets where bacteria are going to make a little party and have a good time with whatever they ran into, something on a piece of wood or a fence post or something that's dirty. So you know that there's probably a party already started in there with bacteria. So those, most likely, you're going to put them antibiotics right away. A small cut that you sutured up right away, a lot of times, we'll just take topical antibiotics and on a small cut. And, of course, the abrasions. You're using antibacterial to clean it off, and you're putting a topical antibiotic on top. So those most likely wouldn't need the antibiotics. I would say talk to your veterinarian about it, and a lot of times your veterinarian will probably culture it, which is a smart move to do.
Okay. And you mentioned sutures, and that usually when they need sutures, you go out there and you're like, oh, yeah, that needs to be sewn up. I need to have my vet out. Is there any time that maybe that might be not be so obvious for the horse owner?
Yeah, there's a lot of times they don't think the skin can come back together. It's a big gaping wound, and they're not sure it can come all back together. I did a shoulder recently. It was a chest slash shoulder where the horse completely lacerated two muscle bellies. And when we put it back together, the young lady that was holding the piece of skin flap up for me, and it was about as big as her hand. It's a huge open wound. She said, skin feels cold. And I said, yeah, we have lost blood supply. It was a certain section of the skin. I said, we've lost blood supply there. But we're going to go ahead and hook it together because right now we're in the middle of fly season. So I'm putting this Band-Aid up, this natural Band-Aid up, and we're going to watch it very closely. And as soon as it starts to turn black, we're going to cut it away. And that's exactly what we did because it was dying, but I was using it as a barrier for the fly so it couldn't get into this big gaping hole where two muscle bellies were cut in half and create a nice little summer sore. So
and flies,
that's the big thing,
wounds.
Is you want to suture it up because you want to keep the problem down because they live outside.
Yeah, and flies on wounds are pretty nasty. Is there anything else that you advise your clients to help keep those wounds free of pests?
It depends on where they're located. I mean, the fly sheets are handy. There's fly leg wrappings that are handy. Of course, fly masks for any face wounds. And then you have to use the fly spray or the fly roll-ons around the wounds to see if that will help protect the flies from landing actually on the wound, that kind of thing. And then, of course, your direct ointments will sometimes be a barrier as well.
Okay. And if these things don't get treated right away, like with if you do have to get stitches for your horse, is there a time frame that that needs to be done in? You mentioned that skin was dying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's 6 hours is what they teach you is the golden period. But as every veterinarian will say, I've sutured it up at 24 hours. I've sutured them up at 12 hours. I've sutured them up at 8 hours. You know, so we've pushed the envelope, and those sutures have held together and worked. The big thing is they've kept that area moist by maybe putting some dilute betadine Clorhex. We, as we call it, freshen the edges, meaning we cut the edges and make a new wound. And the new wound comes together nicely. It depends on how much skin area you have. On a leg, there's not a whole lot you can work with.
No. Is there any way to reduce scarring once it's healing and you're on the right path?
Oh, if I had that remedy, I think I'd be a millionaire.
Don't bottle that, huh?
No, I mean, each wound is going to be addressed and assessed differently. So you have to take each one into consideration of what is involved and sutures and the size of the suture you're going to use. If you're going to leave holes behind because you had to have a lot of tension on it, that kind of thing. So there's a lot to take into consideration whether there's going to be a scar or not.
Okay. And then what if we don't get to these wounds? The horse is turned out, it's not noticed, or isn't treated. What can go wrong?
First thing I think of is summer sore here in Florida, and that's probably everywhere this year because we didn't have a great cold winter, and there's probably a lot of flies where everybody lives because they didn't die over the winter time. The other thing is you open it up to the air and to more, it's going to itch when it starts to scab and contract in. They're going to rub it on something, so they're going to rub more dirt or debris in there, and that's another possibility for infection. Those infections, if they get deep-seated, can create abscesses. Those abscesses can go septic. Those are a rarity, but it can happen. So there's a lot of sequelas to them. the biggest thing I always tell people is if it's been 24 hours like this one that I said it was a ranch horse, and we saw it well over 24 hours, I mean, the muscle was almost like beef jerky because it was so dried up, that all I did was cut away all the dead stuff, and then they continued to keep it clean. It was an open wound, and they bought a fly sheet for a ranch horse. Believe it or not, these people had to go and learn what a fly sheet was and get it for a ranch horse to keep the flies out of it, and they just kept it clean, and it healed up beautifully.
And so your first aid kit for dealing with these, what do you recommend people have on hand?
Well, on FloridaEquine.com, we have a first aid kit, which we've talked about before in this program. But I always tell people you should have four wraps for your horse's legs, and that means everything from gauze pads to a four-inch gauze roll to a cotton quilt and vet wrap for every leg. So four items for every leg, and you may want to have a couple extra Telfa pads or cotton gauze pads because the wound might be large that you're going to have to use a couple of them to cover the entire wound. An antibacterial ointment, the Furosin dressings are good, but you can also get the Novosan or Chlorhexidine dressings, and Neosporin and triple antibiotic that you have at your local drugstores that you use for yourself. Those are all great to have in your wound care kit. Another really nice item I've seen at the drugstores is something called saline spray wash. You can use that to spray out the wound if there's debris. Let's say you're on the trail and you have this little canister of spray. You can spray out the wound with this canister. It's sterile saline. It's nice. Or you can even use your contact lens saline wash if you have to. And that comes in a little squirt bottle, and you can squirt out wounds with those. Those are nice because they're sterile, and it's a good saline, even pH-type fluid to use rather than tap water, which might have bacteria in it, or the end of a hose that might have been laying in dirt and mud. Those are your basics because you can cover wounds, you can do a quick clean, you can put antibiotic on it, that type of thing, while you're waiting for the veterinarian or while you get the horse back to the trailer to haul off to some facility or, you know, cover up the show until the show vet shows up.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. Hopefully we don't have any injuries, and that's prevention is a big key in this also.
Exactly.
Before you guys go, thank you, by the way, Dr. Jones, for making it too gross for people like me. But I wanted to mention that, you know, we oftentimes in the barn also have to deal with injuries on riders.
Did we lose Glenn?
I guess we did. I have no idea what he was going to ask.
I wonder what his question was. I bet it was along the lines of how do you treat human wounds and can you use that first aid kit on people?
Well, that's happened.
I know I've gone to my horse first aid kit to treat myself because
exactly.
I don't have a good human first aid kit.
Michelle, as long as you're not taking your horse's GastroGuard, you know, or Bute, I think you might be okay.
I think, yeah, vet wrap and cotton gauze, I think, are safe to use from your horse's first aid kit.
Okay. Yeah.
Right,
really
Dr. Jones?
Stupid.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
I also have
really
a wound management and managing article out. It's on the AAP website as well as the horse.com. You have your links to those. The link for mine is on my Florida Equine Veterinary Service Facebook page if people wanted to look at that on how to wrap a leg and what items they need and things like that too.
Yeah.
And that is FloridaEquine.com. Yeah, I was going to tell you guys that definitely the horse emergency kit is way more stocked than the human one because I was cutting a fruit for, I was making sangria the other day, just chopping away the oranges and the apples, and I swear to you, I sliced my thumb so bad with a knife, like a big knife, and Chad was in there, and he's like, Glenn, with blood, like, oh my God, oh my God, oh God, oh God, and it's like bleeding like crazy. What do? I run out to the tech room, and I grab some vet wrap and Telfa pad and medication to rinse it out. I think I even got, what is that, like spray that's like the saline spray that everybody uses now, Vetrosin. I put that on it. I used everything, and now my finger's fine. Like a week later, it's totally fine. Thank God for vet wrap.
Thank God for your barn being on property, too. For the thing about those people who have a boarding barn and they got that first aid kit in their trailer at the boarding barn. They wouldn't have that luck.
And you have to drive to get your vet wrap.
Hey, guys, I'm back. I want to put my plug in now. Can you hear me this time?
Yes.
The American Red Cross has an app. It's a first aid app. You can download it on an iPhone or Android. It's called, just search for American Red Cross First Aid. And it actually is really good. So if you have a human, something happens, like Jamie was just talking about, you can look up broken bone, bleeding, burns, asthma attacks. They have about 100 different things. And you go right to it. They have diagrams, and they give you 1, 2, 3, 4 instructions of exactly what to do in each one of those situations. Some of them have little videos. You can play the video. So if you're stuck in a situation, you don't know what to do, somebody's having an asthma attack or whatever, you just bring out your phone, go right there, and it tells you exactly what to do. It's really good app. I was really impressed with it. So it's American Red Cross First Aid.
Okay. They have an equine section on there.
No, they don't, actually.
I'm thinking, Glenn, you know, with my gross pictures and your good stomach, we could probably put one together.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, we could do that. Yeah. We'll get to working on that.
Perfect. Well, you guys, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week. Again, Dr. Jones can be found at FloridaEquine.com, and Michelle and everybody over at TheHorse.com, and go look at these pictures of these wounds. You'll really be thrilled that you did.
Yeah, and next week we're talking about ticks, so get ready for it.
Ooh, yes.
Thanks, guys.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Thanks, ladies.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Wasn't so bad.
No, that wasn't too bad. She didn't talk about digging into wounds and pulling out foreign objects or things, you know, which is what I was expecting, gory, gross stories.
Yeah, no, like, really, you know, you cut the wound, you see it, and you scratch open the scab, and, like, all this pus comes out because it's this huge, giant puncture wound, and those are just the best.
You know, what was that story we did on Stable Scoop, and we had him on here, too. I can't remember the name of the horse. Jennifer, do you remember the horse that had that whole branch that was stuck through his entire body?
I don't want to talk about that.
See, I can gross you out with that one. That was pretty. That was really good. That one put us on the edge that time. What kind of deal with that? Ugh. I don't think you find that one in your app.
I'm going to tell you. You need to go to type this in right now. Horsetalk.co.nz. I don't really want to post it on our Facebook page, but there's a photo of a horse that survived this unbelievably disgusting wound. He was impaled in the forehead like a unicorn. Did you see it?
No.
Oh, God. I can't even look at it. Yeah, it's called Danny, 30, Survived New York Impaling Accident. Danny is called the Miracle Unicorn Horse following a serious head injury, and thousands of supporters have rallied to follow him on Facebook. Danny was found in his stable in New York with a piece of wood lodged in his skull. They don't know how it got there. They took him into the x-ray. They got x-rays, all this stuff, and they were able to remove it, and the horse is now totally fine, shockingly enough. But if you want to see an amazing, miraculous story, I'll just post a link on Facebook. How about that?
Yeah, without a picture.
Well, I don't know if it's going to come up or not. We'll see.
Rhonda Crabtree just said his name was Amigo. That was the name of the horse that got run through with the branch. Amigo, and I don't remember. I should have remembered that.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. We appreciate you being with us. We'll be back again on Friday. Tomorrow we'll have another recorded show for you. As we said, there's that change for the summertime. And Jamie will not be here on Friday because hopefully you're taking Jet to a show, providing he passes all his tests.
He has to pass the vet test today, and we shall see what happens. We'll know. But otherwise, I can't post this link online. It's got the picture. I'm not doing it to you guys. Ugh, gross. If you want to see it, just go to the horse talk. Okay, I'm not going to do it. So we'll see if he passes the vet check today and see if he gets the green light. Otherwise, we're going to have Joe Montana, his second ever horse trial in 2 weeks. Go for it.
Well, good luck with that. We'll be anxious to follow you on Facebook. You've been pretty good about posting updates, so I'll be following you there.
We will. Everybody have a great time. Spay, neuter, and geld. Go ride your horse. Do something fun. It's hump day. Go see Magic Mike. Glenn, you going to go see Magic Mike tonight?
You need somebody to go with.
I know. I really do. Nobody will go with me. need more girlfriends. I bet Rhonda would go with me. Aubrey, Lisa.